many of the contestants, you know, the request to provide the Minister for Higher Education and Public Service Commission would need to also attend to other commitments. Then there was the last request was this morning by the department itself. So I will allow a situation where we can be able to take some other chairs in the center here, but there is a space. And can I also see if members are accommodated? It seems as if we can be able to proceed. Minister Zwanda, welcome and thanks for attending this meeting. Commissioner Shivani, and thank you so much for being present as well, and everyone else. King Zwanda, and the DG here. Okay, the acting DG, together with the department, welcome. We have a very tight program, but quite critical. It's something that we really have to focus on. If you have been following the work of the committee, part of the HR development and management is one of the key issues which we are consistently going to look into and relook. But part of what we want to do is to ensure that the committees, all committees in Parliament, because it's cut across, do take on board the work of the human resource development and management within the government. And therefore, we will consistently identify issues to follow up. Minister Nzimande was once participating in the committee where he gave a broader outlook of the human resource development in the South African context. He will be asking himself maybe why do you call him again, but because it's a consistent program, it is important for us to get that, including the development, which is quite key. But further than that, it will be a quarterly program that Parliament is going to embark upon, but we cannot do oversight as Parliament and don't look into the human resource. It's quite critical, it's important where the country is getting to, where government as well is located within the entire unfolding development, particularly when we look at the developmental state. Where from the BSOR processes, we have identified some of the areas where we realize that HR is not well fitted, and we have a responsibility to ensure that we consistently ensure that at some point we get it right. Yes, I would identify what we have on our agenda and the apologies that are before us, and we can then be able to start. If the Department for Higher Education and Training does have a presentation, is already ready, they will be the ones that will go first. They will be followed by Public Service Commission, and last we will have the Department for Public Service and Administration. Today we've got very few apologies. The chairperson, as you know, today is the cluster meeting. Of course, we're expecting many more members to attend who are still coming in. We have other chairpersons from other committees who will be part of this meeting, but we have apologies from others. The first apology here is from Honorable Ramudive Dorothy, the chairperson for the Committee for Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities. The second apology is Honorable Gordy from SCOPA, the chairperson. He has a tight commitment. Today. There will be other members from the committee. That apology is Deputy Minister Ayanda Jordan, who will not be able to be here with us. Also, the Minister for Public Service and Administration, we already got the apology. That's where also Minister Zimando will be rushing to the committee after this presentation. Lastly, it's Honorable William, who will not be here. On the agenda.
Madam Chair, just apologies for Honorable Dutoy as well.
Honorable Dutoy,
yes.
From AS, is a member of the committee, GA Central, Honorable Mara. Then on the agenda, Honorable members, ministers, commissioners, ladies and gentlemen, we have, as I indicated, we start with the item identified as 2 on the agenda, briefing by the Minister of Higher Education and Training on the implementation of the HRD of the country of South Africa. The second one will be briefing by the Public Service Commission on the report on assessment with the human resource development practice on the human resource development practice in the public service. And lastly, we'll have the briefing by the Minister of Public Safety Administration on the readiness to implement the DPSA and Human Resource Development Strategy and Management. Those are the 3 presentations that we're going to have in that line. We are going to request that we get all the presentations and then we can follow this discussion based on time. And therefore, we may not just break with discussions unless it is something very key that requires hearing. Prime Minister Zimando.
Chair, if that is the case, I would have a problem then because I won't be here. I was hoping to be released by 10:30. So, which means I can't answer questions then. I won't be here unless I would get the official.
I'm sure members would like to hear some responses. We'll allow some space there so that we release it. While we would actually just be flexible and try and accommodate that, and then we'll take the presentation, other presentations after you've left. Can we then agree, Honorable Members, that we proceed with the program? Minister for Education, Honorable Zimando.
Yes, Chairperson and Honorable Members of the portfolio committee and the senior officials who are here from all the departments. Thank you very much. Maybe just some few preliminary comments before I go into it. First of all, I don't know, Chair, maybe if I start by lamenting. I don't know how we'll ever solve this problem of time to engage with the portfolio committee. Because like today is Cabinet Day, you have to try and maneuver. Yet, we regard engagement with portfolio committees as very important and a space to get critical feedback and so on. So, by the way, is our view as the executive that even question time in Parliament is not enough. It doesn't give us time to properly account. But I know that that's not your problem. But I just need to say that up front, really, because somehow we will have to find a way that we are able to have more time to actually engage at this level you know, outside of the big television and cameras in the house. So I just thought that I needed to say that. Secondly, Chair, on the HRD, I was saying that because I apologize. I would like to sit here till 12:30 ordinarily, you know, but it just becomes impossible. So as members, honestly, we will have to solve this problem one way or the other. Secondly, on the HRD strategy itself, I want to remind members, you know, that the human resources development strategy that we're talking about is human resources development strategy for the country as a whole. I think it's important to mention that. And also let me just say up front, when it comes to the public service, I know that we are interested in terms of the public service. Let me just say up front as well that last Friday we had an HRD council meeting. And one of the key decisions we took there was that we need to have an urgent meeting between Minister for Public Service and Administration, myself, and then Palama, the Peace Leader, and also find a way of involving the Public Service Commission to really discuss the challenge of human resources development in the public service. Now, human resources development in the public service has got two dimensions, by the way. The first one is to train public servants that we need a capable, as part of building a capable state, we need to train the public servants. But there's another dimension, well, that's the path that is led by the Minister of Public Service and Administration. But there's another dimension to the public service which we lead as the Department of Higher Education and Training, using the public service as a training space. The two things are not exactly the same. For internships, for learnerships, for work placement, whether for FET college students or university graduates who require that during or immediately after they complete their studies. Unless these institutions work together in an integrated way, we are not going to do it. And we are expected to meet, come up with a strategy. There are elements of the strategy. I'm aware one is going to be presented by the Department of Public Service and Administration, which was presented at the HRD Council. But these things will have to talk together. If we are to be able to drive this program. Now, my presentation really, I'm going to run through very quickly the other slides. I want to focus on progress, Madam Chair. I'm sure that's what you are more interested in, the members as well, because the other things is just really to remind you.
Actually, a very critical, what should be waiting on in terms of the programming and so on. You know, it's quite a concern that on Wednesday we have this clash, you know, because it projects a picture that ministers don't want to come to Parliament, and that's not correct. At the same time, we do want to engage with ministers, you know, once we have the committee meeting. I think all the issues that you've raised are quite critical. The fact that we have this meeting, possibly called, let me not preempt the meeting for a further elaboration, like I said, of a form of a seminar. That is not lamentation on the matters that you have raised. We are within the governance and monitoring, and it's upon this committee that are within governance and monitoring to look into those matters, and therefore we will get away in other fora to really discuss those matters and try and clear them. But we also appreciate and know that despite the fact that it's impossible for you to attend, most of you do make some time to be here, and that is all appreciated.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, so let me just then try and run through this very quickly. This slide But you see, there is just to remind ourselves, it's something they should know. The governance structure, we've got the HRD Council, which is chaired by the Deputy President, with relevant ministers represented, by the way, including the Minister of Public Service and Administration, Minister of Labour, Minister of Economic Development, just Minister of Home Affairs, just to mention some of the ministers who sit here, together with those representatives. And the HRD Council has a secretariat which runs its affairs on a daily basis, which is managed by our department, because we are the department that is managing the HRD strategy, which is led by the Deputy President. And then under the council, we've got a technical working group which oversees the work of the council and coordinates. It's made up of the smaller grouping of the representatives that are on council. And then under that, we've got technical task teams, as well as some provinces now have got some provincial councils and fora. The mandate, just to remind ourselves, is to advise the Deputy President on implementation of HRD policies. It's a medium for constant dialogue. The third one, I would say, is perhaps, Chairperson, the most important mandate of the Council, is to identify blockages in the skills development pipeline and seek ways and means to undo those blockages. In other words, the Council is not an implementing body. It's departments, it's business, it's others who do the implementation, but it's a forum to say, where are the blockages and how do we address those bottlenecks and blockages. The objective, to remind ourselves, is to increase responsiveness of training in line with our developmental agenda, address quality as issues in education and skills development pipeline, address skills shortages in priority areas and establish institutional mechanisms for coordination integration, and optimize efficacy and outcomes of HRD. At the moment, Chair, you will remember we have a 5-point plan, which is what I will also come back to in terms of progress. The 5 points. Now let's go back to the 5-point work plan. These are the 5 things that we have identified as requiring immediate attention so far, although these now have been amended with the HRD plan that we are developing. It's to strengthen and support FET colleges. Production of intermediate skills is related to the first one, but it's also distinct and professional. Production of academics and stronger industry educational institutions partnerships, foundational learning and worker education. Now, this is a summary of the achievements that were made, which we are going to be also talking about in the rest of the presentation. The Council was launched. We have a strategy, we have a technical working group, a secretariat, some provinces, KZN, Eastern Cape and Northern Cape have got provincial HRDs. We have a 5-point plan that we've identified. We've got 9 technical task teams. And we have a draft national integrated HRD plan that is before Council at the moment, which is something we'd like to come and share with you in some detail once Council has adopted it, and also to hopefully take it to Cabinet. Now, let me spend a bit more time on this. We have circulated these commitments, by the way, what they are, and which ones are the lead departments. One of the things that the commitment in terms of improving schooling that we have agreed upon and declared by the Department of Education are the annual national assessments, the ANAS, which has now been developed and we are able to run this test for grade 3, 6, and 9 to see where we are as a country. The department commitment of 6, which relates to innovation, there is now a strategy and action plan that is in place that has been developed by the Department of Science and Technology. Obviously, we can't be sharing these in detail in such a short meeting. Maybe the idea of a workshop at some stage. Or actually the committee, I'm sure, has the right to call the relevant ministers at appropriate time to come and present. Because the way the HRD Council functions is that we identify the responsible department for each of these commitments to actually lead that process and report back to council on progress. On economic development, the commitment that is led by EDD is actually to integrate, to make sure that the objectives and the job drivers, the implications of job drivers of the new growth path into the human resources development strategy. We've also done a lot of work, I must say, on maritime skills. In fact, there is even a debate whether we do not need a dedicated center for maritime skills, because that is a very important component, and it's potentially a job creator. I might also say there, Chairperson, just really a highlight, you know, is that we've identified 6 FET colleges that we want to build capacity for maritime skills, mid-level type of skills for the maritime sector. By the way, the commitment 4 is about professions. It's about development of professions and medium-level skills. One thing that we are very excited about is that we have now developed a program for the production, or to eliminate bottlenecks in the production of professionals. We hope that that program will be able to share it with you. It's going to be presented at council next year, first meeting of council. In short, Chairperson, some of the things we've identified is that there is a lot of gatekeeping in the pipeline to produce professionals in this country. Some of it, frankly, deriving from our own apartheid past, and other meaningless things that have been put into place that we are identifying in the production of professionals. Let me make 2 examples, if you allow me. Chartered accountants, we are using the model that they've been using to develop and fast-track the production of a specially trained chartered accountant. We have 30,000 chartered accountants in the country, of which just under 3,000 are black African. It's a huge shortage. For example, if we are doing the honors program of chartered accountants, it's called the CTA offer. You write 4 modules, 4 courses. If you fail one, you repeat everything. Now, when I asked Saika, why do you have to do that? They say, no, it's because accounting standards change every year. Then I say, well, it means also LLB final years, you must do the same. If you fail one course, you must repeat everything, because we change laws in parliament every year. So it's just a gatekeeping thing. But SAICA, in the end, they tell us that no, it's not their own requirement as a professional body, it's the universities who have introduced it. So we're engaging the universities. Now, we are sort of engineers at the moment. Lots of engineering graduates have been in the system for the last 5, 6, 7 years. They have still not qualified as professional engineers. And the reason for that, they are not being given adequate workplace exposure so that they are able to graduate fast. That's gatekeeping as well, which unfortunately then keeps mention white, pale white men. And there is a big problem in terms of the production of black engineers, just like black chartered accountants, also in the system, who normally suffer from the fact that they don't get given work and they take longer than to write their board exams and so on. All what I'm saying, Chair, is that we are looking into all that with a view to actually speed up. Of course, we always get some objections to say we want to lower standards. We have dismissed that with the contempt it deserves. Thank you. We don't want to lower standards. But those things are being said by people who want to keep certain skills deliberately scarce. Because a scarce skill, you get paid more. So all this gatekeeping, I said I must just focus on that also because it's one area where cabinet has been quite hard on us as a department to say, what are you doing about these blockages in the professions? The next one, the Department of Communications is a lead department in terms of ICT, e-skill strategy. A presentation has already been made to the council, but we ask them to go back and make an improvement on that, but there is progress, there is work that is being done. We have, between ourselves and the Department of Basic Education, we now do have an integrated teacher development strategy. And by the way, also we'll be beginning as from next year to reopen some of the colleges of education. We are starting with the one in Pumala. It used to be called the Wandebele College of Education. We are reopening it now to focus on foundation phase teachers under the University of Johannesburg. And in 2014, we'll integrate it into the new university in Pumala. On public service, maybe let me just pick up on Commitment 7. I have already spoken about that. I just thought I had to elevate it because the HRD plan for the public service must be located within the overall goals of our national development plan and our HRD strategy in order to strengthen the public service. Just quick progress. Technical task teams are really the engine rooms that are doing work. I must say that this is still a lot of work in progress. Some of it you might not see the outcomes for now, Chairperson, but there is really a lot of work that is being done. The one task team that we are proud of, which has completed its work, is that now, for the first time in our country after a long time, we've got a standard 7-step process in the training of artisans. We've established what is called the National Artisan Moderating Body, because at the moment we've got more than 100 different types of artisan training. Everybody claims to be, we privatized, by the way, this artisan training and ran it down as well, if we were to be self-critical. We have established a body now to say, here are the national minimum standards, because we want all artisan training to be accredited, so that we know, if we say we'll produce you as an artisan, you are a qualified artisan with the requisite skills and acceptable levels of quality. Alignment, the other task team on aligning the Asian DSA with the new growth path, that's work in progress. Foundational learning, we are in the process of commissioning this study. Allow me also just to share with you very briefly. What do we mean by foundational learning? We mean the first, let me put it differently. We mean early childhood development, grade R, and the first 3 years at school. A lot of work is being done there, including, by the way, the production of foundation phase teachers, which is a priority. Normally, it's very difficult to correct things at a later stage if we don't get our foundation right. But also, Chairperson, I would just like to mention something that you might want to think about going forward. That also, we think that in our system we also need other kinds of foundation programs further on. For instance, the failure rate of students who are at FET colleges who left school after grade 9, because you can enter FET after grade 9, is very high. very, very high, which means the kinds of great minds we are producing do not have the adequate foundation to be able to grasp aspects of vocational education. We're asking ourselves a question, maybe we need some foundation program, because there is a huge wastage there. Now, matric, there is a debate that has been running away from, I want to admit. I don't know how the media then report that. I'm not an irresponsible minister. You see, we are one of the few countries, very few countries in the world, who have got a 12-year schooling system and 3-year university degrees. We possibly may be the only country. I'm not sure, but very few. Many countries either have 13-year schooling system and a 3-year degree, or if they have a 12-year, they have a 4-year degree. So, in fact, our matriculates, we are often taking them into a slaughterhouse in university. That is why 40% of the students we support with the National Student Financial Aid if they fail their first year. 40%. It's an issue that as a country must debate, because the dilemma is that there are people who are saying we must have a 4-year degree. But the reason why I'm saying I'm shining away from this issue at the moment is that I'm not so sure whether a 4-year degree will tackle the problem. Or we may introduce a 4-year degree, very expensive, but it doesn't tackle the problem. Then what do we do? Or do we need to add one extra year of our schooling system in order to be able to deal with it? I just thought I must say that. FET College's chairperson, I'm not going to go into detail. I have a press conference today on a detailed turnaround strategy that we have developed to improve quality and expand our FET colleges. The one other issue that you may want to think about, especially as this portfolio committee, we do not have as yet in our country what I would call an integrated college system. You know, a number of government departments have got their own colleges, including DPSA has got Palama. The police have got their own college. National Intelligence have got their own college. Home Affairs, I understand. Department of Health has got nursing colleges. Provincial Department of Agriculture has got agricultural colleges. But all these colleges, they do not talk to one another in terms of articulation, transferability, and recognition of modules and programs. That is the task we are setting ourselves as the DHET to move towards that. Some of the departments come to us, you know, the police, for instance, have said they would like their programs to be recognized and so on. Now, there's lots of work that has been done then. On production of academics and industry partnerships, it's work in progress. Maybe just to highlight a few things. We've got a national skills accord that we signed with at NEDLAC, one of whose aims is to strengthen the academic industry, university-college industry partnership, including placement of college lecturers so that they teach what is relevant and not teach some work perfect 4.1. Which is what I started using in the 80s on ICT, something that is long obsolete. I've spoken about the production of professionals. These are task teams, education and entrepreneurship. It's work in progress. That is going to be tabled next year. There is a very strong view that we do need to strengthen entrepreneurship education, also even as part of defeating tenderpreneurship, Jefferson. We need entrepreneurs, not tenderpreneurs, which is their biggest enemy in whatever progress we are trying to make. Worker education. The council is strongly of the view that workers who are empowered are an asset in the economy. Including Mukhabulu, by the way. Yes, I must have been they are an asset in the economy. Skill system review. This is what I want to just say very briefly. After that, I want to take no more than 5 minutes now, Chair. I'm focusing deliberately on this because it's about progress that I'm trying to share with you. We have a task team that is looking at our skill system, especially our CETA system, on whether it is correct to have a skill system that is based on sectors, sector education and training authorities, CETAs, rather than on occupation. Let me illustrate what some of the debate would be there. Is that, for instance, you have got about 7 CETAs that train electricians. An electrician is an electrician, service. Whether you are in the construction industry or engineering, you know, or you are in a municipality. But the tendency is sometimes to treat as if these are 7 different kinds of electricians. An electrician is an electrician. So there are people who are saying maybe we should be focusing on occupations rather than on sectors. Although the sentiment is that maybe we need to strengthen and improve and transform the CETA system. There is a ministerial task team which has finished its work, which I'm presenting before cabinet with recommendations. I would be happy at some stage if you want me to come back and do this here. There has been some kind of a feeling that maybe the CETA should go to their relevant departments. That has been ruled out. By the way, the implications of that is that you would have to do away with the team, the Department of Higher Education and Training, and just leave it as higher education. That you do need central coordination of the system if they are going to actually have an impact, just like they were in the Department of Labor before. All right, let me then say, lastly, on the HRC plan. The other slides you can look into. I'm just going to focus on this one and end, Jefferson, with your permission, because I couldn't go through all the slides. The HRC Council has taken a decision that we need an HRC plan, which is simple, understandable, with the buy-in from all the stakeholders, labor, business, government, communities, which, as I have said, we have now presented the initial draft to the council on Friday and it commented. And it will be built on these principles. It will build on existing work that we have already been doing so that we don't reinvent the wheel. It will seek to relate to the new growth path, national development plan, industrial policy action plan. The plan must be able to look ahead to anticipate the country's HRD needs. Let me just share with you one thing which, as you are noting, at some stage I would be more than happy to come and talk about it to you. We have established a very huge project which we are funding over the next 5 years with $100 million, which is called the Labor Market Intelligence Project, which is an attempt to develop a plan for skill supply and demand in the country so that at any one point, ideally, we need to move to a situation where we know the skills of every South African, level of education, where are we short of skills, where do we need to train. It's a massive project. It's the only one of its kind in the world at the moment. In fact, I was pleasantly surprised at UNESCO. So many countries, even developed ones, they say they would like to work with us because they think they need such a thing. They do not have it. So there is work that has been done there. The next principle is that the HRD plan needs to contribute to the development of critical skills across all the sectors of the economy. We also want to have a plan that has got strong monitoring and evaluation mechanisms. Of course, accountability, responsibility and accountability to ensure that departments that are leading, or if it's employers in particular sectors, they must be able to be monitored, evaluated, but also to account and to strengthen partnership. We are hoping that by the next council meeting we will have a complete HRC plan informed by our strategy, which then we would like to come back and present it here before this portfolio committee. Because as I end, Chair, I want to reiterate this. Contrary to what sometimes is being said, as the executive, we do want to account, we do want to be engaged, we do want critical feedback, especially from the portfolio committees. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I was just worried that you'd end up and say, Amanda. Okay, Minister, I think the presentation is quite good, but it's worrying in terms of the outcomes of the things that the challenges that we need to engage with. I'm definitely going to open up for members to raise what they want to be clear in terms of the presentation quite quickly, since you know that the minister has to leave. But also to emphasize, Minister, that we are very much aware that this discussion should be elevated to a seminar and would actually ensure that the department becomes part of the planning for that seminar where all committees of parliament should be part of it. There are some hands from the members. I saw Honourable Murray. Is there any other hand? Honourable Murray.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Minister. Minister, I mean, unfortunately, we haven't got the time today to go into all the details, and I would have loved to see this made more applicable to our responsibility as the Department of Public Service and Administration to look at the challenges within the department and all the departments of civil service. We know what the results of or what the outcomes from the Public Service Commission was, and also the Planning Commission. And although these issues are very, very important in terms of the broad economy and the broad South African society, obviously our responsibility as portfolio committee is to look at the public service. And obviously it's very difficult to see from this how it gets applied in terms of our focus and our task at hand. And I would love to have seen more, because the one thing that you have mentioned that I fully agree with you, and that is that the civil service should be used as a training ground. I think it is the responsibility and it's the role of government to use its own environment to train people, to prepare them for the world out there. But now, unfortunately, if you haven't got a trained public service, you know, then who's going to train those that, you know, that is going to work in this public service? And we know that the Public Service Commission and the Planning Commission said that one of our main problems are that our public servants are not properly trained. They haven't got the skills and the knowledge. So you know, it's really the blind that leads the blind. And if they must train the people, I mean, what can we expect from those people? How will they be prepared for the next generation? Very badly, in fact. So obviously, I would have loved to hear your view of the role, how this should be done, that we can basically set the environment where people can be trained within the public service to prepare them for the next 50 and 100 years. Then secondly, I think within our portfolio committee, we've discussed it many times, the conflict that we've experienced between the role of PCTA and PALAMA. in terms of training and capacitating public servants. We heard the one day in Parliament where the Minister of Public Service and Administration said that you decided on one Sunday afternoon that apparently PCTA must be with higher education and not with the Department of Public Service and Administration. Because we have got a clear conflict of PCTA, which is in your department, PALAMA, which is in the Department of Public Service and Administration, and you've got a conflict in terms of what should be the role of each, because you cannot have duplication in terms of the roles of each. I mean, they must dovetail, they must complement each other, and currently we don't have that. I would love to hear your views of the role of PCTA versus that of PALAMA. Thank you very much.
Next, Honorable Mutima.
Thank you very much, Honorable. Just want to thank the Minister for the presentation, which was really high for me. And without a waste of time, I'll just focus on 3 points. When the Minister addressed us on the mandate, he did zoom on the identification of skill blockages and the recommendation of solutions. I do agree with the Minister that this is indeed key, and I just want to know whether we are winning the battle here. He has mentioned a few blockages, like in the chartered accountants course, engineering. He talked also about LLB. And I do remember when I was doing LLB at UNISA that one of the blockages was Africa. Not in the curriculum of LLBs, but as one of the complementary subjects. Now, UNISA is international. We had many students coming from Zimbabwe, coming from Lesotho, and coming from Swaziland, and these students could never get their degrees unless they passed Africa. And the question was, why was it imperative? So I do agree with ministers that some of these are mere gatekeepers. They don't enrich the degree or the student. So I just want to know whether we are winning the battle there. The Minister also talked about monitoring and evaluation, which again is very important. We always get the feeling that this is not receiving enough attention. And I just wonder whether the Minister will agree with me here or anything is being done about this to ensure that we get the outcomes that we need. Then lastly, Chair, I just want to again focus on the readiness for our matriculants to tackle university education. I did teach at UNISA for 25 years, so when he talks about the concern of the failure rate, I know exactly what he's talking about. And he is weighing up two options, either a four-year degree, which we get in a number of universities in Africa, or more years at high school level. I just want to say that I don't have a question here, but just a comment, that I'll really go with more years at school level. In fact, when we were growing up, we always spent 11 years. There was a passage, of course, the white spent 10 years. They went up to grade 10, and that was for them a matric level. With blacks, you had a primary school up to standard 6, a junior secondary, which was a 3-year, taking you to 9 years of school, and then a senior secondary school, which would be Form 4 and 5. Although we did spend 11 years, I don't know about readiness, whether we were at that level ready for university. I think it needs to be enriched. But really, when you think of the failure rate of course one university, and you think at the frustration to the students who are doing Form 1, they end up doing simply because they don't understand where they are and what they are about. And you think of how expensive universities are, by the way, we are very grateful, Minister, about the amount that you now pour into NASFAR. But most of it is wasted because 40% failure rate is very high rate, as we say. So I would really offer these 11 years of school, but also add that people should pass NASFAR. Because to say 33% is a pass is merely fooling the student. And he only is he or she is disillusioned at the university to establish that, of course, he didn't pass matric, he doesn't know anything. So we should also perhaps insist that people should pass matric, but pass, I mean, 50%. Thank you very much.
Thanks, honorable members. Possibly, Minister Grosia, you need to leave quite quickly just to raise these two issues, which comes as a concurrent presentation. The matter around the gatekeeping in terms of developing professional skills, etc., I think is a concern. We therefore have to have a way of confronting that, you know, collaboratively. Both the government and all other sectors, possibly it will help because the Department of Higher Education and Training is actually leading the technical team on HRSAC at this. So I think it's one matter that we would have to confront, discuss about, and at some point we need to even project some topics and discussions in Parliament where we deal about this matter. I'm sure we need some motions to really talk about it. And we are noting it as one critical point that we'll have to carry it over in terms of this program. We cannot afford a situation where we talk of the transformation of South Africa, where we still have welfare bottlenecks. You know, I always refer to the kind of background of education which was in the country. We all know there was bantu education, it was meant for different people. Not for, you know, it's a shocker that some of other people are in other areas. But the fact of the matter, if we still have gatekeeping, then it means we are on the sidelines of ruling the country or of governing, you know, and therefore that is one critical aspect that we definitely have to work on. We need a program or carrying it over as this committee, but also as Parliament, would need to really engage on this matter. It's a worrying one. The other issue, Minister, you know, when you talked about commitment service, you know, I have vested interest as well as public service and administration. I thought I would hear more. That's where I was really looking. I sometimes do get, you know, this feeling most of the time that, to me, we seem not to collaborate sufficiently. We seem, as government, not to collaborate sufficiently. You know, most of the time, when there's a problem, we really, that here is no, you know, clear collaboration, and it's supposed to be that way. And that's what, because you normally preach collaboration as this committee. We think that public business and administration should be on board, should, you know, once we talk about the scale, it should naturally come, you know, because we cannot talk about this HRDC as a scale and don't really talk about the services and administration. Something to me is not sufficiently covered, and that's my area of concern again on that matter. The schooling system, Minister, yes, well, we would have to engage as well on that. You know, you talk possibly we shouldn't be thinking of an extra year. And one thing that possibly we need to bring here, you know, perhaps on the college, the integrated college system that brings, you know, that year should be in another form where, you know, it's within the integrated college system, or, you know, as a bridging gap, of course. Because we talk of the current situation that is in your heart. And what can we do in the room? and we know that quite a lot has been done. You know, I have been looking at the presentation, and I realize higher education and training, we have also got other programs. It's going to be difficult for you to just talk of the HRD, CSA, and leave out some aspects of the department, but because of the timing and the speed, it's completely impossible. You know, we could have had even some questions now, and that seems to move to the Department of Higher Education and Training. That is why then elevating this to a bigger seminar where we can sort of put topics to dissect them that will certainly assist Parliament. You know, because we need to move into that space. But just to indicate that, of course, we're looking forward for the HRT plan, that's the greatest one, where, of course, would come back in a form of thorough discussion. Can I just allow you, Minister, to zoom into the
Chairperson, yes, thank you very much. Let me try to be as quick as possible, because I'm aware also you have two more substantive items. Honourable Murray, my mandate was to talk about the HRD SA and where we are. So that's why I covered the entire framework. And also I had thought that even though you want to zoom into the public service, this broader framework is helpful in terms of locating your own work as a portfolio committee. And that in any case, a lot of these things that I'm raising here have got lots of implications for the public service itself. And then it is the CSA which should then zoom into the public service specifically. And or for the committee itself to actually say what does this mean for the public service. As I have said, we will come up with an integrated plan together with the DPSA. As I reported, the HRD Council was quite clear that we need to come up with a plan for training and skill development in the public service, and especially those two dimensions that I spoke about. The one is training public service, the other one is public service as a training state. And which relates to what the chairperson is saying, the fact that the HRD Council said go and blend together the two departments with Palama, the PCTA, and also find a way of involving the Public Service Commission, means that we do need to improve coordination. It's something that we have identified. In fact, we have met before and done some work, but not enough. Together with I remember very well I have met with the two previous ministers on this matter, and we're hoping that with the current minister we can take that work forward along the lines that I think it's within that context also that we'll clarify the relationship between Palama and the PC. I don't have sleepless nights about that, I must admit, Honorable Marie. I think we can find a way. Each one has got its own unique contribution. For example, one of the things that the PCTA should be focusing on is on the public service as a training space, as its primary focus. Not exclusively, doesn't mean that it can't be involved in the training of existing public service. But then it will have to do that working very closely with Palama. I think that what is important, I'm not saying the issue I'm raising is not important at all, don't misunderstand me. But I'm saying that I do believe that we need to sit down and actually say what is the primary task of each. What will not be possible would be to say, of the 21 sitters, you have one that belongs to a department and doesn't fall within the skills system. Because the intention of the Skills Development Act, which governs the sitters, was to make sure that there is actually a relationship. There are certain things that we cannot be able to do. In fact, you can fragment the system in a manner that is whilst now we are able to say to all the sitters, all of you, in whatever else you are doing, for I'm making an example, prioritize unemployed graduates, for instance, their placement. All of them. We can say that to the sitters and build that into their service level actually. Just as one of the challenges, that it's anomalous, we have a shortage of skills, but we've got thousands of unemployed graduates. I've said to the sitters, go and prioritize addressing this problem. So the issue, though, is that obviously we as a department have to work very closely with relevant departments vis-à-vis training. For instance, we need both of us, the minister, Minister Sisulu and myself, to say what are the priorities and what should be the role of the peace and Palau. That's what we need to be doing. In a way, then, that will clarify this. But we hear you, what we are saying as the portfolio committee. Honorable Musiman, Tabizo, are we winning the battle in removing the blockages? Well, I would say there is that progress. But remember, when we are talking about blockages, we are talking about undoing the blockages in the entire pipeline of skills development, from grade R. We must have all the kids ideally going through grade R. That is a very important obstacle that we need to remove, because we are laying a better foundation. In the schooling system itself, yeah, that is the slide I didn't show because of time, that for instance, the HRD plan is coming in looking at the pipeline in that way. The foundation phase, your schooling, your post-schooling, and the workplace. So we have to remove blockages in all that, you know, to different aspects, because each component of the pipeline has got its own unique. The production of more students who have done math and science at requisite levels for you. It's a blockage at the moment that we will have to be looking into. I would say that we are making progress, but that's at the heart of what we need to do. For us as Department of Higher Education and Training, our green paper talks about the next 20 years. That, for instance, we must be in a situation where every district must have a college campus in the country, and that every student who is at an FET college must at least be guaranteed 12 months learning experience. Your skills accord and all those things are aiming at undoing those kinds of blockages in order to, in the entire pipeline. Including the issue you're raising of monitoring and evaluation. It's absolutely essential. We are placing that as a key issue in the HRP plan. Quality. And you cannot be able to ensure quality unless we have got strong monitoring and evaluation mechanism. I can only just underline that. I'm glad you are mentioning this thing of the example of Afrikaans and law, for instance, because we still have some of those things in the system that just do not make sense. Why do we insist on certain things as requirements when there is no need? That's not being negative about Afrikaans, by the way. It's a very important language. We've got a lot to learn from it in terms of the development of African languages. How did Africans do it? But making an example, there are many things that have got nothing to do with quality. As I have said, well, look, there's a debate about this thing of 33%, whether 33% is a pass rate or not. My colleague, Minister Mosecha, always explained that 33% does not mean that we have passed. If all what it says is that if you have gotten 33%, there are certain minimum competences that you have acquired. But it does not mean that you have passed. You can't go to university, for instance, on 33%. So sometimes we take as if this 33% means a pass rate, when in fact it says, if you have got one-third knowledge of this, it means there are certain minimum competences that you can build on for other things. It does not necessarily mean that it is a pathway. I know we get whipped about this, you know, that we are lower in standard. No one is interested in lower in standard. We want the best for our teaching, which we were deprived of in the past. Chairperson, just addressing your questions as I am and your comments, I really do strongly agree with you that some of these issues, like on gatekeeping and so on, need to be raised in motions, in debate, in member statements. My own view sometimes, I feel that Parliament, there is too much politicking and point scoring and not enough on real issues of transformation. That is what we need to be debating about. Things that are at the center of our developmental agenda. I'm glad if you're saying that, because indeed we'd like to see these issues being raised and debated. I think that I have addressed this issue of collaboration, which you have raised. We hear you. We recognize ourselves. We can still do more in terms of cooperation, especially between the two departments. We assure you that the kind of discussions we are going to have and the kind of plans that we're going to come up with will meet with your approval. And of course, after engagement with your own suggestions on improvement. Lastly, on the issue of the bridging here, there's a ministerial testing that has just reported back to me, which I had asked to look at this foundation issue for colleges and for universities. They've come up with a very interesting report. Basically, they are suggesting that we do need what in international education language is called second chance. For example, they are suggesting that we need a higher education certificate offered at the FET college. We had said to them, assist us to think through how do we increase people who have done matric with the requisite level and quality of math and science. For example, what they are thinking of now is that we need a higher education certificate, which will act like as a bridging. You take those students who in the language that we used to know, I don't know what it's called now, the S, those who have passed with an S.
Standard
school leaving.
Standard
not matric exemption. That we need to target those, because these are the youngsters who actually sit at home and end up doing nothing. For instance, take those who have done math and science, just as an example, and they've got 40-49%, but they've got capacity. The reason why they haven't passed well is because they might not have had a math teacher or a science teacher at school, or they got disturbed somehow. Universities used to do this. I know of engineers today who went through those foundation programs, those with potential, so that you just increase the number. But now the demand would be for more than just math and science. What do you do with those with an S, but with potential, but they didn't do well? And, well, international experience is full of that. Bridging is... We used to do that, by the way, in South Africa, as I end, because we get accused of wanting to lower standards. I always make an example about with Joe Slovo. You know, at the end of the Second World War, all returning white soldiers in South Africa were given an exemption to attend university. Slovo didn't even have standard 8. And he benefited from that and went to Wits University and graduated and qualified and became one of our best lawyers. It's called recognition of prior learning. We used to call it exemption with age in the past. But today when we talk about those things, they say, no, these ministers are interested in lowering standards. We really have to think very creatively, because as I always say, in relation to our youngsters, Tabiso, we don't have other youth other than the ones we have. We can't export these ones and import better ones. We have to make do with what we have. Thank you very much.
Minister, we are definitely going to release you. You have actually done your task, and thanks for your cooperation. Yeah. I mean, encourage you to continue to, you know, work thought I should take 5 minutes break, you know, or 2 minutes, a quick break, then come back to public stage.
First time that I've experienced it, the staff members actually applauding a minister, and it's actually not their role to do that in a committee meeting.
I think the whole matter is the problem of the venue.
Yeah, but I mean, it's the role of the staff. It's not to applaud. It doesn't work that way. Why are they doing that? No, but I mean, staff know that. It's not their role. They're here to bless the men, to do that. Yes. This is what so I'm not sure what will come out now from this, from them. It's only about saying what the minister is saying. No, it's, I mean, I'm shocked. I'm really, really shocked. It's a huge question mark to me.
I think they just need
to be reminded. No. They've done it twice or three times now. Every time the minister is the committee member's not doing that. If they need to be informed, it must be us, not them. It's not why they're here.
The point needs to be.
Yes.
It needs to be put for correction.
Thank you. Okay, can we request that everyone comes back so that we can proceed with the business of the day?
I don't know.
Yeah, but if you know what you don't know, then it's fine. Because then you can bring people in. Yeah.
Okay, honorable member, Krishna, we are proceeding. We will be proceeding now with the presentation and administration and from the commissioner side, advocate Susan Susan Duke are here. And can I just hand over to you, advocate Susan?
Thank you very much, Secretary.
Switch on. Just switch on.
How do you switch on?
There's a button that says on off.
thank you very much, Jefferson, and members of the portfolio committee.
Chairperson, if this, I need to apologize, as you already know, that the chairperson and the director general were going to be here to present here. They are also conflicted because of the meeting of the cabinet where they are also presenting. Chairperson, if this really was my meeting after listening to the Honorable Minister of Higher Education, I would probably ask that we should close this meeting and go and work on the things that have been raised. It's obvious to us, having listened to him, that we need to really to affirm the issue of that in this area of human resource development, especially in the public service, that there's a lot of alignment and coordination that needs to take place. From our side, the Public Service Commission will definitely have to follow up on the promise of the minister to have a meeting to discuss the coordination, and secondly, we will also be seeking ways of how we can participate as the Public Service Commission in the Council. Also, we have taken note of what the chairperson has said, that when we look at this area, we must look at it within the context of a developmental state and developmental public service. I think it's one of the underpinning principles that in reviewing some of the plans that are in existence in this area, we'll have to take into account. And I'm happy to say that, Chairperson, looking forward, one of the things that we will also take from what the Minister has said is to actually look at these plans and look at possible review of some of our plans that we'll be talking about, both ourselves and the Department of Public Service and Administration, as to whether the plans that we have do speak to the new growth plan, the National Development Plan, and the Industrial Policy Action Plan, as the Minister has said. So that's why I am saying that it might be really necessary that we have to present the plan today, but the plan that we might be presenting might already be questionable and dated in the light of what the minister said, and actually give us an assignment that we must go back and see how we can review and align all these things. With that, Madam Chair, I would ask our Deputy Director General, Mr. Dovani Mampiswana, to take the committee through our presentation today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, the Chairperson of other Portfolio Committee present here, and members of the Portfolio Committee present, good morning. And the Commissioner from the Public Service Commission, Commissioner Lisa, and colleagues. I think the presentation from the Public Service Commission is for the report that was done on an assessment of the human resource development practices in the public service. And I think as the I think as the commissioner has indicated, our report might have been a bit outdated, but I think it's important that it's also presented to this portfolio committee in light of what the minister has also said. The presentation is structured in the following way. We'll present introduction, legislative framework, the scope of the study, and the methodology that was applied. And then we'll present the main findings. We'll also talk about the reflection and analysis, and then we'll talk about the recommendations and possible implementation strategies, and then we'll conclude. The public service is a labor-intensive employer dependent on the quality, skills, and performance of its employees. It is critical that the policy framework for human resource development in the public service be monitored to ensure that it achieves its objectives. The Public Service Commission undertook this study in order to determine whether the training and development is directed at the core skills the department need to deliver on their strategic objectives. Appropriate monitoring mechanisms are in place to ensure that training and development plans are indeed implemented accordingly, and whether the impact of such training is assessed. And then there were a number of legislative frameworks that were considered during the study, and then some of them were the following. Skills Development Act of 1998, which says the aim of this act is to develop and improve the skills of the South African workforce. The Skills Development Levies Act of 1999, the aim of this act is to prescribe how employers should contribute to the National Skills Fund. Public service employers in the national and provincial sphere of government are exempted from contributing to the National Skills Fund. White Paper on the Transformation of the Public Service, 1995. The aim of this white paper is to establish a policy framework to guide the introduction and implementation of the new policies and legislation aimed at transforming the South African public service. The white paper on the public service training and education, the aim of this white paper is to provide a framework for public service training and education that is appropriate, adequate, and accessible and meets the current and future requirements of public servants, the public service, and the public in general. The Human Resource Development Strategy Vision 2015, and the aim of the strategy framework is to provide guidance on the development of employees in the public service. Human Resource Development Strategy for South Africa, and the aim of this strategy is to maximize the potential of the people of South Africa through the acquisition of knowledge and skills to work productively and competitively in order to achieve a rising quality of life for all and to set in place an operational plan together with the necessary institutional arrangements to achieve this. The scope of the study was the national and provincial departments, and in the departments that were sampled were in the three sectors. It was transport, agriculture, forestry and fisheries, and treasury. And in total, there were 60 departments. In other words, there were 10 from the three sectors that we spoke about. 10 in the sense that there will be 9 plus 1, 9 from provinces and 1 from national in all of the three. These departments were selected on the basis of the role they play towards effort to improve infrastructure, rural development, and poverty alleviation, as well as financial management, which were identified as part of the key priority areas of government for current administration. The methodologies that were applied were in the following way. There was a desktop study of previous reports produced by the Public Service Commission in the particular in this area. A questionnaire was used during interviews with managers responsible for human resource development practices within the sample departments. And these managers, of course, are the ones who reside with the knowledge of the human resource development practices in their respective departments. Strategic plans, human resource plans, retention policies, human resource development strategies, and policies of the sample departments were obtained to ascertain whether sample departments understand the link and assess their compliance with DPSA's Human Resource Development Strategy Vision 2015. And then I would like to present the findings of this study. And then I think they will be in the thematic areas that were used during the study. Theme number one in this regard was human resource plans, human resource development strategies and policies. 97% of the departments that participated in the study had developed and implemented human resource plans. Department of Agriculture in the Northern Cape did not have a 5-year strategic plan at the time of the study. The National Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries did not have a human resource plan in place at the time of the study as well. However, 53% of the departments had human resource development strategies in place. Even though they claim to have utilized the DPSA's Human Resource Development Strategy Vision 2015 as a guide, only 63% of these departments complied with basic requirements for a human resource development strategy. In terms of the theme of workplace skills plans and skills audits, 97% of the departments had workplace skills plans in place. 56% of the departments had conducted skills audits, of which only 13 of these departments had proof of a skills audit being done. In other words, during the study, we were also looking for any evidence that would show that departments indeed did what they are saying they did to us. But in this regard, as much as 56% of the departments said they have conducted skills audits, only 13% have got proof or evidence to that to this end. 43% of the sample departments had never conducted a skills audit, but expressed an interest in utilizing Human Resource Connect. They utilized the personal development plans of individual employees to determine their training needs. In other words, for them, there's no skills audit, but they only use PDPs in this regard. Even though training takes place, enough care is not taken to ensure it is directed at the core skills departments need to deliver on their respective mandates. With regard to human resource development structures and committees, all departments have skills development facilitators in place and human resource development or training committees. 88% of the sample departments only had one skills development facilitator, while 29% had two, and four had as many as 9 skills development facilitators. Most departments were of the view that the number of the skills development facilitators was inadequate. For example, it was indicated that some departments with a staff establishment of 4,000 had at least 4 or 2 skills development facilitators in place. Surely in that regard, it can be indeed agreed that it is not adequate. A common challenge across all sample departments was that meetings of committees were often postponed, and there was a lack of commitment, especially from management, in this regard, during the course of the postponement of such meetings where the skills development facilitation will be done. Assessment of training and development policies and programs. 60% of the sample departments had learnership policies and programs in place. While the majority of departments had learnership programs, these have not all been implemented due to lack of funds in their respective departments. 90% of departments had internship policies and programs in place. The implementation of internship programs within departments has not been most successful. This is a positive sign given the fact that South Africa is faced with a high rate of unemployment, especially among the youth. Therefore, the opportunity that they are given through internship is noted. 37% had mentorship policies and programs in place. The reason for non-compliance was lack of understanding on how to establish such a program, the lack of participation by staff as mentors, especially senior managers, and financial constraints, unavailability of time for coaching and mentoring in the department. Impact assessment of training and development initiatives. None of the departments had a system in place to assess the relevance and impact of training and development initiatives. And I think the issue of monitoring and evaluation has been spoken about by the Minister of Higher Education and Training as well. Lack of capacity in HRD components leaves little time to do research on and to initiate a system in this regard. Departments resort to relying on the information contained in individual development plans or personal development plans to assess the relevance of training in relation to employee performance, not in terms of the skills audit required in the respective department. In some instances, service providers assess the overall success of the training by allowing the recipients of the training to complete an assessment questionnaire. As the questionnaires may be subjective, with no actual on-the-job assessment of any improvement in the skills or the ability of the employee to do the work after such training, very little value can be attached to such assessment. 1% in terms of skills levy. Most departments did receive the 1% and more from the budget for skills training and development. Although budgets were allocated, the money was never enough in terms of the departments that participated in this regard. The fact that most training and development courses had to be outsourced placed a strain on the budget. The HRD budget was the first budget to be used to supplement other components in the event of shortages. Management support. One of the main challenges which HRD practitioners said during the study was that they faced in implementing HRD initiatives was the lack of management support. Many departments cited that due to lack of support of line managers, HRD units found it difficult to implement the practices effectively. Support provided by the Public Sector Education and Training Authority, PSETA, and Public Administration Leadership and Management Academy, PALAMA. Departments are experiencing support challenges with PSETA. The numerous templates that have to be completed are regarded to be not user-friendly. Only 10% of the several departments use the services of PALAMA due to the fact that courses offered by PALAMA are expensive. Delays were experienced in receiving invoices from PALAMA, and in some instances, duplicate invoices were received. Departments opted to utilize services of tertiary institutions as they found them to be credible, courses were accredited, and feedback from courses attendees were provided. Support provided by other training academies. Some provinces have training academies that are regarded as efficient and effective. I think the minister spoke about this as well in relation to the academies that are formed by other departments. The training was affordable and was due to the fact that these academies fall under the umbrella of offices of the premier, and the courses were presented by permanent training staff employed by the offices of the premier. In the event that these academies had to make use of services of an external service provider to conduct training in certain areas, the price would be negotiated for the public service. And I think what we see here, we're seeing some of those training academies in terms of the Free State, KwaZulu-Natal, Gauteng, and Western Cape. The following are some of the reflection and analysis that we have from these particular findings of this study. The overall picture that emerges is a worrying one. A highly challenging HRD framework implemented in formalistic tertiary fashion in ways that are oriented towards compliance with requirements without achieving performance-driven results. Evidence of this is the widespread instance of 1. Plans without strategies, 2. Workplace skills plans without audits, processes and activities without clear outcomes. To a larger part, the lack of rigor in implementing HRD framework seems to be a consequence of a lack of both capacity and commitment by public service leaders to HRD function and practice. HRD is not seen as a strategic priority area, and the focus is more on routine compliance as opposed to performance and improvement in learning organizations. Monitoring and evaluation of the performance and impact of training and other capacity building interventions require rigor and capacity which is currently inadequate. This is a major concern, and unless it's addressed, performance in this area will not improve. This failure to ensure that a major investment by the public service in a specific area of activity is achieving a return needs to be addressed. I want Honorable Chairperson to present this particular slide that follows, because I think as much as it's exposed to you, it was not necessarily related to this particular study. So therefore, I will skip this to slide. The strengthening of key institutions involved in this terrain is a priority. HRD initiatives must be supported by PCETA and Palama that functions optimally. Departments are grappling with the implementation of HRD framework, which is regarded as complex and challenging. Insufficient account appears to be taken of the very limited capacity of the HR functions in public service entities to implement their directives. The implementation of HR Connect is a critical success factor that must be accelerated. It is interesting to note that provincial academies are of the most part functioning well. The reasons for their success should be identified. Should the possibility of establishing them in provinces that do not have them considered, or the need to consider them. The following are some of the recommendations that the report has made. Departments need to develop the requisite capacity to comply with the legislative and policy frameworks necessary for HRD. They also need to ensure that they have the necessary strategies and policies in place, and there should be consequences for non-compliance. Departments must implement their programs as budgeted for and must be held accountable for the spending of the funds. All departments must comply with HR Connect requirements to ensure that they are aware of their current skills as well as the skills gap that needs to be addressed by targeted recruitment and or training interventions. Departments should ensure that an understanding of skills form the basis of workplace skills plans and not individual performance development plans only. Top management must provide the necessary support to HRD components, provide the resources, and ensure that monitoring systems are in place to ensure the returns of training investment. The DPSA, which is present here, Honorable Chairperson, needs to develop a tool for departments to be more accountable for the 1% skills level. Departments need to provide an extensive expenditure report to the DPSA on the training conducted within their departments for each financial year. Reasons for non-expenditure must be provided. The school sector should play a more developmental role within departments and should also monitor whether training as outlined in the workplace skills plan is actually conducted by those respective departments. Finally, the possible implementation strategy in this regard, leadership is developing a common curricula for South African developmental state. There should be the following areas: entry-level certification for recent graduates, foundation and promotion programs, Masters in Leadership and Management Program, Senior Executive Training, Middle Management Training, Local Government Training, and Government Employee Programs Sustainability Training, and establishing a series of partnerships in this regard through PALAMA, Higher Education and Training, Provincial Local Government, local government, South African Universities, CITAS and FET Colleges, International Universities for Senior Executive Management Programs, and research partnership, as well as private sector partnerships. Although there have been HRD strategies and policy frameworks in place and a greater sense of implementation of workplace skills plans by departments, many challenges still remain for HRD managers wanting to make a significant contribution to departmental performance. It is evident that if the challenges that were raised by the Public Service Commission are not addressed, government will continue to invest in training and development interventions that yield fewer results, thus compromising service delivery in the public service. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee.
Any comments on this? Okay. Let's proceed to the members if they have issues to raise in the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, a lot of the information that we have now heard, I think that we've seen the other day, some of these graphs and tables was part of that presentation as well. Chairperson, one wants to say now, where must one start? I had expected an applaud from the gallery, as they've applauded the minister, because this is the real fact, sirs. This is the real facts that come from, and the real challenges that we have to deal with. And it's actually a pity that the minister is not hearing this, because then he will probably understand better the challenges that we are facing with in public sector, in the public service. Because how do you deal with these? Because if you look at some of these figures that has been given, if I just use as an example the public workplace skills. If you that workplace skills plan, it seems like a lot of departments go and tick the boxes and say, you know, we have ticked the boxes, so now we have complied. But then it stops. If you think that 65% of departments have conducted a skills audit, eventually you find that only 7% basically of everybody of these departments had proof of skills of audit being done. Only 7%. And if you look at some of the other findings that has been given to us, it shows that there is absolutely no commitment in the public service that we can move on this basis. So somewhere as a matter of urgency, there needs to be an integrated plan between higher education, between public service, and between the findings that we find here. Because if you're not going to address these issues, it means that you will not have an educated and a skilled public service. And it means that you can send in as many people as you want to go and train there. They will not be trained. They will not be properly be prepared to do the jobs. Because again, as I've used the phrase, if you know what you don't know, then you are very far down the line. But if you don't know what you don't know, my goodness, and you're going to run into this tunnel, you're going to think it's the end of the tunnel, the light, and then it's actually a train coming from the front. And you will only look at that and say, hey, there's the exit. And you will find that, and remember, this is South Africa that we're talking about. It's not only a department, because this is the effect in all the departments. And it's enormous alarming. And if we don't take this serious, Then my view is, then you can go and you can look at figures and you can interpret that. If you do nothing about that, nothing will happen. Currently, and we have seen it so many times, this is not the first time. We have seen it from the beginning of this year. And I'm sure, Chairperson, you have seen this and heard this in the previous years as well. And if I listen to the minister, I actually want to differ with the commissioner that you don't have to go and adapt now. You must actually, the minister must look at his findings, because these are the findings. It's not that you must now go and try to accommodate him in terms of what he said. These are the realities. And if you don't address these shortages, then you will never get to his objectives and meeting his objectives and those targets. So, Madam Chair, I don't think there's any questions that one can ask, because these are so condemning. And my concern that I've said in the past is Public Service Commission is doing excellent work. Then one can ask the question, so what? And I think that what we have said in the past is that when you come with the act to be amended to give you more teeth, then hopefully we will find in the future that there's more departments that's going to listen to and take serious your findings. But until that stage, it seems like it's a free for all. And if government is not taking his biggest asset, which is human resources. It's not buildings, it's human resources. They don't take that serious and try to maintain that properly, you will not get the return on investment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Honourable Mohali.
Thank you, Chair. And I would also like to thank the DDG for the presentation from the Public Service Commission on the assessment of the human resource development practices. And and the word that we always use, Chair, is collaboration of institutions or departments. And I am happy because for this presentation today, the HRD of the country and the HRD of the public service, which we are still going to listen to the presentation from the DPSA, and the assessment that has been done by the Public Service Commission, which is going to assist all of us to see where we lack and where we are not lacking. And we still have Min Tombela here and her colleagues who are members of the HRDSA Council will be able to take whatever they gain from here to see where there are gaps in the HRDSA Council. It doesn't need the Minister of Higher Education, because higher education is only serving as a secretariat. They are still here. They are members of the council. They have to take this. Here is the assessment. Then what's happening? And also we still have public the department, which is supposed to tell us what's happening in the human resource development in the public service. They are the one who write reports and so on. They are supposed to tell us what's happening. So I would suggest that we move to the DPSA report and listen to what they are going to say to us, because I think there are more reasons than this. If I can ask the DDG, or what financial year did they compile this report? Because you might find out that the state has changed. I don't know whether for the good or for the worse, but you might find out that the state has changed from here to something better or something worse. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, yeah, I think we would really need to move forward. If you listen to the presentation, there's clearly a disjuncture in terms of the discussion. Obviously, without sounding like a broken record, I would always argue about the methodology and, you know, the selection, which we may not necessarily say that we can conclude the picture in that way. And I understand, of course, this findings were done some time back. They don't really match with, you know, they don't take us forward in terms of the presentation that we had. And therefore, we acknowledge and appreciate that Public Service Commission has moved to another level at this moment in terms of doing an overall assessment, you know, which can be able to key into these issues that we talk about. come to meetings and you want to hold the country transformation. No, country, you don't move. That's stagnant because there are these issues. We do want to interact with the issues that we raised earlier on because those are the things that can transform our country. We do have the interest of transforming the country. We don't have the interest of holding the country advanced. That it shouldn't move because so-and-so is still behind and so-and-so hasn't done 1, 2, 3. And therefore, in the interest of taking the country forward, we want the discussion about human resource development and management to, at some point, collaborate. Once there is a discussion, because at the moment there is a discussion, you know, we are still, yes, like the Honorable Chris said, we're still going to listen to the PSA. The fact that even in terms of the presentation of that was made by Minister Nzimande did not sufficiently cover commitment number 7 does clearly show that this danger, and as members of parliament, as representatives of the people out there, surely it's not our interest to keep to hold the country at ransom. Our interest is to ensure that once they appoint us, that we're not moving as the country to transform the country. We need to zoom into that area and ensure that, critically so, this parliament addresses that, because that's why we're here. Okay, I think, let me hand over to Advocate Susan, then we can move to the next presentation.
Yes. Thank you very much, Madam President. I agree with the input that has been made. It's clear that
our report, I mean, if it is dated June 2011, so it must have dealt with things in 2010 and so on. So I'll that I would acknowledge. And I also acknowledge what Honorable Murray is saying in terms of that the picture is not that promising in terms of the development of skills within our public sector. But what I just want to emphasize to the Honorable Murray is that what you see in what we are saying, what we presented today by the Minister of Higher Education actually present the way forward. The key thing that we take from that is that what the Honorable Minister was saying is that with the state that we're in, as item 7 of that agenda, the solutions lie in the collectivity of all those efforts to deal with them, including improving our state of education. Because, for instance, if you talk about the skills that are reflected in the public service, some of them actually originate from the kind of education we have or we have inherited. Because, for instance, if you take a law student who comes from with an LLP or even with a master's, when he gets into the public service, that person, in most instances, 9 out of 10, they would not be able to draft legislation. They would not be able to draft a legal opinion. The same thing you will see with a person with a master's in public administration and so on, would not be able to do a report like required the public service or draft a submission. And even draft a strategic plan, we have to train and show them how it is done. So it is the merging of those challenges that will reflect the kind of program that we'll have, that will be able to provide these things. And I think in the Higher Education Council that the Minister was talking about, some of those things, and including how we ourselves operate within the public service, will actually find resonance and solution to that. That was the point that I was agreeing with and emphasizing. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Commissioner Sizani. I think moving forward, honorable members and gentlemen, let's take the presentation by the Department of Public Affairs and Administration. Acting Digital, I'm going to present you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Kenneth Avenda, the DDG responsible for HRMT, is going to make a presentation on behalf of the department. Thank you.
Okay, in the meantime, we are preparing for the next presentation, can I just highlight that we had initially planned as the committee for next week, but we'll have two briefings. The first briefing was planned to be by the DPSA, Department of Services and Administration, and the second one would be by the Department of Children and Persons with Disabilities. So we were focusing on the program of disability on the 21st of November, and we had the two departments that were planned to be here and discuss on a number of other things that we've been engaging on, a way forward on some issues that are finding. And we are very disappointed as a committee that this the program for next week for committees has been cancelled because the census that is supposed to report for, to all other committees. But well, of course, it's not going to be a thrown away activity. It will still come into a program. Possibly the department by then they will even be well prepared for this program, because we are going to send specific requests and responses in terms of the findings that we have as a committee on areas of disability. And we will actually make sure that the program, once it comes back, it then reflects on those issues that comes as a way of question. Now, seeing that I still have space to proceed, is that we will then have the committee meeting on the 28th of November next week. Then it stands as none of the committees that are participating on these days will be proceeding with our program. Our program had been cancelled for next week, but then we're all participating on the outcomes of the census of 2011. And then the week after next, which is the 28th of November, on that week, we are going to have a program that looks into things that we deferred, including we just brought the single public service, the progress thereof, together with Section 100. So it's going to be a little, it's definitely going to be tight and busy. Best to discuss those matters in one meeting. So on that meeting, it will be the briefing by the Minister for Public Safety and Administration on the progress relating to several public service. And then there will be a briefing by the Department of Public Safety and Administration together with COPTA and National Treasury. Including the Premier of one province, that is Limpopo, will be invited on Section 100 on the constitutional intervention in provincial administration. We actually picked up the province Limpopo because it's a province where we went for oversight on the Section 100, and therefore, in terms of highlighting progress, it then became important for us to have the province concerned being part of also the engagement, so that we are able to see if the gaps that had been realized had been closed sufficiently while implementing that program. The last program would be on the 5th of December. That will be the last activity for the committee, where we will be having the briefing by the Minister of Public Safety and Administration on the Data General Strategy Progress thereof, to find out how far have we gone. And I would like to appeal to the members, especially Honorable Manuleke, that all of them should be present at this meeting, because we require a quorum so that we can be able to implement these things. And some of them needs to be, we can be able to adopt the minutes, because some of them have to be implemented during the process of December, January. And therefore, we don't want to be bogged down by the fact that they are still not, we haven't adopted the minutes. We require a quorum from all the members so that we can be able to deal with that. And then thereafter, we can release the members to go wherever. Okay. We are going to proceed then. If the department is ready, can go ahead.
Good day, honorable members, dear colleagues, and commissioner. Ma'am, I'm going to speak on the Human Resource Management and Development Strategy for Public Service. And I think up front I need to be very clear and indicate that for the public service, there is no consolidated or a single human resource management development strategy. There's a range of strategies that are in place that DPSA over the years have put in place to manage human resource and to support departments in the implementation and management of human resources within departments, covering human resource development and a range of the human resource management functions, be it labor relations, be it around human resource planning, be it around recruitment, retention, movement of people, and those types of things. So it's a range of policies, and in the interest of time, I'm not going to go through all of them. I'm going to skip to a number of slides. I think it's there for the members to read to a large extent. But for the presentation today, we want to look at the human resource development strategy in particular, and I want to focus a bit on the pillars, but spend more time in relation to the status, where we are and the progress we've made to date. And then part two, a little bit about the human resource functional areas that I want to focus on. I also would like to state up front, Madam Chair, that yes, the presentation from the Public Service Commission, I think to a large extent DPSA concurs with a number of the recommendations that are put on the table. It's an area that we're also very concerned about and we've identified as DPSA. But having said that, I need to also indicate that a number of the recommendations in the report of the Public Service Commission are being addressed as well. For example, the 1%, the recommendation on the utilization of the 1% went to the Governance and Administration Cluster Committee yesterday, and it will go to Cabinet next week, as well as HR Connect and the implementation across government. So I'll speak to some of those specific issues in my presentation, but we need to also note that between DPSA and the Public Service Commission, that the collaboration and the strengthening of the work and supplementing the work we jointly do, I think we need to find a way of saying there are a number of recommendations there. How do we take it forward? How do we take it forward as DPSA, where the Minister of Public Service and Administration has the legal authority to implement this in the public service? How do we implement it? How do we ensure compliance? And how do we ensure enforcement? And I think those are things that between ourselves we need to start engaging on. Madam Chair, we as DPSA fully recognize that human resource development is the cornerstone for effective service delivery. If you do not have capacitated and skilled public servants in the right places, doing the right things and knowing what is to be done, we'll never achieve a developmental state. So that is acknowledged, and it's the basis on which all our strategy is based. I'm going to touch on a few of these things going forward. I want to look at the third bullet. The DPSA's role, and I think this is important to also note, and I think many of the members have already addressed this issue. The current human resource management framework in the public service is a decentralized model. The Public Service Act and the Public Service Regulations creates this decentralized environment where the individual executing authorities, individual MECs and ministers, are responsible for their staff. The employment of the staff, the training of the staff, the exit of that staff, the transfer, the promotion, career incidents, the performance model management, all aspects of the life cycle of an employee within an organization is the responsibility of individual EAs. But having said that, I think it's important to note that the responsibility of DPSA is to create a national norm and standard so that all of them operate within this national framework that governs the manner in which we do things. And I think DPSA, to a large extent, has achieved that. We've done a lot of work in the last few years in ensuring that we've created an enabling environment and the necessary frameworks are in place. And I think the Public Service Commission in their presence have clearly drawn to that fact. They assess in relation to the frameworks we've put in place. The question is, are they being effectively implemented at that level? And I think, as I conclude, you'll notice it's an area that's of concern to DPSA as well. We've also taken it a step further, Madam Chair, in terms of the human resource development strategy. We looked at the repositioning of HR to ensure that human resource management in departments take a central role in terms of the career incidence of employees as well as in ensuring the service, the effective service delivery within an organization. And in that regard, we tried to a large extent, bring together a number of the human resource practices, the human resource management areas, and try to give departments guidance from the extent of establishing structures in terms of human resource management, in terms of the functions of each of those functions, within the structure itself. We're trying to give guidance in that regard as well. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. I think we've done presentations in the past in relation to the Human Resource Development Strategic Framework, which was Vision 2015, and that's coming up for review now. Madam Chair, we want to draw attention to the fact that, yes, the inputs from Minister Nzimande, Department of Higher Education and Training, is an area that we need to now focus on. It's an area we need now to review. But not review in the sense that we need to shift from what we're doing, but a review in the sense that we need to take into account the inputs from the Minister of Higher Education and Training. And the two key areas that he's raised that are central to the public service is the professionalization of the public service and opening up the public service as a training space. And I'll speak to that at the end as well. So Vision 2015 will have to be reworked to align with those inputs that's coming from the Department, from Minister of Higher Education and Training, that's coming from the Human Resource Development Council, and trying to address the issue of employment within the public service. The issue of employment and unemployment in the country as a whole. We need to also note in relation to learnerships and internships, the public service has been doing a lot, and as indicated by the Public Service Commission as well. Point two, departments don't take HRT very seriously. That was one of the findings. These are all the issues that led us to develop Vision 2015, and this was the analysis done between 2002 and 2006. I'm not going to go through all of them in detail. This was an analysis done in 2008 as part of the development of the strategic framework, and it gives you an indication of departments' readiness based on the following indicators, indicating in relation to quality of training initiatives. The readiness of the departments to implement that was at 6.2. What is interesting is the skills supply management. The readiness of departments to understand that and implement it was stood at 4.3. And the strategy put in place a mechanism to enable departments to start doing that and to understand how to manage skills supply going forward. Unfortunately, I think we've still got a little bit more work to do to get to the level we want to be at. The strategy itself was aimed at building an efficient and effective public service through the establishment of policies, structures, and operational processes for developing capable and high-performing employees. Madam Chair, as I indicated, in relation to building and establishing those policies, we've done that. It's now ensuring the effective implementation of those things. The core objectives were to set the Human Resource Development Strategic Framework in a social, economic, and legal context, to present and explain the context, structure, and principles, and to present a framework and process for the successful implementation of the strategic provisions of the requirements. The strategic framework itself was based on four pillars, and that's the work we currently do within DPSA in supporting departments around these pillars. The first pillar dealt with capacity development initiatives, which focuses on building human capital for high performance and service delivery. In this regard, intervention areas identified included strengthening systems for workplace learning, learnership development and management strategies, promoting learnerships, internships and traineeships, e-learning for the public service, and fostering higher education institution and further education and training colleges partnerships. I'll indicate later the progress, and you'll notice we've made some progress in that regard. The organizational support initiatives, this recognizes the importance and integration of human resource development systems through formal organizational support, and we'll speak a little bit of progress around that as well. Pillar 3 deals with governance and institutional development initiatives, and Pillar 4 talks to the initiatives to support government's economic growth and development. And that Pillar 4 is the emerging work that we're doing in relation to SIPs, the strategic infrastructure projects, the work we're doing around the National Growth Plan and so on. In a nutshell, just to speak on some of the implementation in terms of Pillar 1 and in relation to the other pillars as well. Coordination of the integrated strategies, including rural youth development programs, reporting on the implementation of internships, learnerships, and artisan development program. And as I indicated, that is one of the areas we've made substantive progress in terms of ensuring that the public service is opened up as a training space in relation to internships and learnerships. We now working very closely with the Department of Higher Education and Training around artisan development. We've also resuscitated the GCETA forum. We believe that this forum is essential in terms of governance, in terms of coordination, and in terms of ensuring that we have a coordinated approach to training and development within the public service. All 11 CETAs or 12 CETAs that have public sector departments as core partners in those CETAs form the basis of the GCETA forum. And we work together on a range of issues in that regard, including artisan development program. We also have the career guidance exhibition where all departments jointly with the CETAs indicate to people looking for work what are the opportunities within the public service. So that seems to be working very well at the moment. As I indicated earlier, the utilization of the training budget, one of the areas we found is, yes, departments set aside the 1% for training budgets. The moment there's difficulties in departments, the money is shifted from training budgets to wherever the problem or shortages are. We've also identified, and we need to acknowledge that, a number of departments spend more than the 1%. We saw departments spending up to 4% of their budgets on training, which is very, very exciting for us. The second thing we also found is that a large percentage of the 1% that is set aside for training ends up in short courses. So they're not focused, dedicated training programs that lead to qualification. So we have to address all of that, Madam Chair, and therefore we've introduced a directive in terms of the utilization of training budget. We're hoping that this will help to capacitate CETAs, all government-aligned CETAs. It will also direct those CETAs in terms of government-aligned training. It will ensure that funds are set aside for learnerships and internships in the public service. And thirdly, that a large chunk of that money, 50% of the 1%, should be used for in-service training. And in that regard, we're focusing on Palama, and we're focusing on the provincial academies to support that training going forward. The policies on recognition of prior learning and e-learning have now been approved, and they are being piloted in a number of departments. In fact, we're piloting in KZN, and we're piloting in Gauteng, some of these things. The e-learning policy has been approved, and it's been piloted as part of the compulsory induction program for public service as an outcome of Resolution 1 of 2312. So progress has been made there, and we're also working towards an integrated e-learning solution that's linked to the IFMS project as well. This slide simply gives an indication of compliance monitoring in terms of the strategic framework in relation to implementation plans. And you'll notice that between 2011 and 2012 and 2012-13, we seem to be fluctuating. It's going the wrong way. In 2011, Eastern Cape submitted 12 implementation plans, and in 2012-2013, we only got 8. And the rest of the table gives that indication, for except one or two departments who have remained the same or have grown, for example, KZN. You'll notice even in Western Cape, from 13 departments submitting in 2011-12 and in 2012-2013, only 4 departments submitting. So we've identified those as some of the concerns, and we will be supporting those departments in ensuring better levels of compliance. In relation to learners and interns, you'll notice from these figures that we are implementing the program of learnerships and internships across the public service in all of the provinces as well as in all of the national departments. We seem to be doing a little better in relation to interns than in learnerships. We've identified, like Public Service Commission, the greatest challenge around learnerships and internships is the question of coaches and mentors. We are now working very closely with the PCETA to ensure that we can capacitate managers and supervisors to become effective coaches and mentors, so that these people become efficient and effective. The other problem we've picked up, and I think it's important to note that, is departments are simply looking at this, getting the numbers in place, just employing interns. And the challenge is that a large percentage of them, after the completion of a year's internship, simply return to the unemployed market. They are not absorbed in the public service. So we want them to become a little more focused and structured in terms of the internship. Interns are not for the base. You should be employing interns with the view of accommodating in terms of what you need in an organization. So it's one of the areas we've identified, and we're going to work with them. It's interesting to note in 2011-2012 financial year, we appointed something like 25,000 interns and learners. To date, as of 30th of June 2012, we've already appointed a further about 10,200 odd interns and learners in the public service. This slide is simply to acknowledge that as part of the interns and learnership, we're also promoting disability profile in relation to interns. We're using the internship and learnership program to also boost the targets that we need to achieve in relation to women as well as disability profile in the public service. It's still a way off, but we are hoping that we will be able to get there. Gauteng has shown us that it is possible, and they've employed something like 48 as part of this process, as well as 4,185. Of the 4,185 interns that they've had, they've got 48 of them are people with disability. We're hoping that that 48, once they've completed the internship, do not leave the public service. They are absorbed in the public service. And that's the work we're currently doing with the departments. Madam Chair, I think I've spoken to a number of these issues as part of my slides, just to give you an indication as to progress in relation to the internships and as well as the budgets and so on. We want to acknowledge there are a number of challenges, and we're putting them up front in terms of the presentation. We acknowledge there is a huge challenge around compliance by departments, although we acknowledge that there's been improvement. Departments are improving. We're noticing in terms of the quality of reports we're getting, in terms of the submission rate, it's definitely improving. If all of the reports you look at, you'll see the numbers are increasing. But we still need to get to a 100% rate. And from DPSA side, our view is we should ensure basic compliance at 100%. The quality is something we can work on, but at least basic compliance should be at 100%. And that's the work we still need to do. We need to strengthen and support departments in strengthening monitoring and evaluation across the board. The reality of self-assessment with departments has to be verified, and we're doing some of this work through the Management of Performance Assessment tool together with DPME, where we're implementing MPAT across the department. So we utilize our reports to validate what departments are saying through their self-assessment in MPAT as well as what they're submitting to us. The ring-fencing of human resource development funds, we are now strengthening through the 1% utilization and directive in that regard. We want to enhance the role of the Office of the Premiers to support us. We acknowledge that DPSA is going to be difficult for us to try and work across all of the departments simultaneously, so we want to use the Office of the Premiers to support us in the work we do. Madam Chair, the following slides deal with the various other areas that we've been doing work around. This deals with the leadership development management system and framework, which is linked to the Human Resource Development Strategic Framework. This one speaks to senior managers and trying to capacitate senior managers. It looks at organizational performance management, it looks at competency-based human resource management, training and development management, as well as management and administration of career institutes and senior managers. The broad view in terms of what we want to achieve with the Leadership Development Management Strategic Framework is to promote, support, and implement the National Skills Development Agenda and the Human Resource Development Strategy to ensure a steady supply of homegrown leadership and management skills and the absorption and retention into the public service, to establish the leadership pipeline in the public service with targeted training programs and to assist in identifying leaders of tomorrow through a systematic process. and finally to ensure an adequate level of human capital performance in public service organizations that ensure effective service delivery in order to meet development imperatives. In terms of progress, the senior management competency framework has been developed and implemented across the public service, and it's been, all departments are following it, and it has been implemented through a directive. Development gaps have been identified and have been built into personal development plans of individual senior managers, and I think this is part of the problems we picked up as part of our assessment, that many of those gaps are not being closed. And one of the things we've done as part of DPSA and professionalizing the public service, we want to issue a directive. And Madam Chair, we will be presenting that to the committee soon as well, a directive on compulsory training for senior managers. So we want senior managers to complete the 11 core competencies before you can progress within the senior management level. So the third bullet speaks to that directive on compulsory development and mandatory training days. We've also amended the executive protocol in relation to the appointment of heads of departments and DDGs across national and provincial departments, and we've strengthened some of those areas in terms of qualification, in terms of procedure, in terms of principle, and the requirements for appointment. With regard to the strategic human resource functional model, Cabinet has approved the repositioning framework for the functional model for departments' HR components. The model provides for the following functional human resource management areas: HR organizational strategy and planning, HR utilization and capacity development, HR practices and administration, employee health and wellness, employee relations and people management. What that model tries to do, and I think this is the slide we need to look at. We tried to provide for departments a generic functional model for human resource management and development components, because we found in our assessment across departments that there was discrepancies in the way departments approached it. So we wanted to give them exactly what should this HR component look like within an organization, and what each of those units should be the main purpose and function. And we've supplied that to departments. We've noticed that many of the departments have taken it on board, and they are now in the process of implementing this generic functional structure for the departments. We've also done some additional work in supporting departments around the repositioning framework. We've developed and implemented the Human Resource Planning Strategic Framework, the Human Resource Development Strategic Framework, as I indicated, the Leadership Development we spoke to, Employee Health and Wellness, all of the other strategic frameworks, as I indicated up front, we don't have a single framework, but a range of frameworks to support departments. We even went a step further as DPSA in supporting the work that they need to do, Madam Chair, is that we provided guidelines, toolkits, templates, manuals, and assessment instruments to support departments in what they need to do. And I think that's largely been the responsibility of DPSA in creating this enabling environment. So, Madam Chair, with your permission, I don't want to go through each of these frameworks, because I think they're there and we've gone through them at different stages. We've also issued a number of mechanisms to improve compliance, and that talks to the directives and so on that we've issued at DPSA. As I indicated, that we're seeing progress, we're seeing some movement towards a level of compliance, even as part of the MPAT work that we do with the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, that departments are moving towards compliance, and I think doing the further work in terms of aligning performance with all of these things is showing us that heads of departments and departments are taking them a little bit more seriously. This slide simply talks to the self-assessment of HR plans at the departmental level, and again talks to the levels of compliance, and I think that's self-explanatory. But I think what's important to note here is that in some provinces, we're noticing that there's very poor compliance, and in other provinces there's better levels of compliance. And based on these analyses, we focus our attention. We support those departments with poor compliance rather than those that are doing well. With regard to human senior management performance, senior management services, performance management development system compliance, it's an area that has come up on a regular basis in terms of monitoring the signing of performance agreements. This slide gives an indication as well that we're seeing a general improvement, I think even from the side of the Public Service Commission, that we're seeing an improvement in the levels of compliance. But I want to just note a word of caution here. This analysis is based on 98 departments that have responded. So this is only based on those that have responded. We're not sure of the level of compliance in relation to the other 65 odd departments that have not submitted. It could give you a totally different picture if you add those 65 departments that have not submitted a return to BPSC.
Okay.
Madam Chair, again, employee health and wellness is an area that we spend a lot of time on. We believe it's critical in ensuring a healthy and safe working environment for public servants. And in this regard, we've provided and developed a number of policies as well as guidelines and tools for implementation. The SOLVE guideline is an interesting piece of work that we've done at DPSA. The management of psychosocial stresses in the public service. There's about 11 different stresses that we've identified, ranging from economic stresses to social stresses to work life, sleep, insomnia, a whole range of it, and we've created little booklets that we've distributed to departments for them to use, both from an employee perspective as well as from an employer. So managers can also use the booklet to support employees that are suffering from any of these psychosocial stresses in the public service. Again, here you'll notice that we're seeing a gradual increase in the completion of these policies and the implementation of these policies and so on. Diversity management within the public service, we look at the, in particular, disability as well as in terms of women in senior management position, and we support departments in ensuring we can get to the 50% mark as well as the 1% to 2% people with disabilities in the public service. Madam Chair, the further slides speak to give further details in terms of the progress in that regard. I want to indicate also, as part of this process, we do work very closely with PALAMA, and most of the training that are done in terms of diversity management, as well as all the other human resource management practices, are done through PALAMA. So we have a very close working relationship with PALAMA in relation to capacitating of public servants in this regard. Madam Chair, in conclusion then, I think we want to acknowledge that there's a great amount of work that has been done in establishing an enabling environment with regard to human resource development as well as human resource management in the public service. We need to acknowledge that the responsibility of implementation is at the departmental level. But having said that, we also acknowledge that DPSA has a responsibility of ensuring compliance or monitoring compliance and enforcing implementation as well. We acknowledge this poor compliance level, and it's an area that we need to turn to and move towards. Going forward, the role of DPSA, Madam Chair and Honourable Members, is the one where we're going to shift focus from the development of policy and implementation of policy to focusing on the implementation support to departments in ensuring the appropriate and efficient and effective implementation of that policy to improve coordination, to improve monitoring and reporting on compliance. And finally, Madam Chair, based on the input from Minister of Higher Education, DPSA over the last year has shifted focus in terms of the professionalization of the public service as well. And I thought it's important for me to mention this as part of conclusion. In relation to the professionalization of the public service from a training, from a human resource development perspective, we're looking at it from three parts. We're looking at it from an entry level, where all public servants coming into the public service must complete a compulsory induction program, and there's a directive that the minister has issued in that regard. And I want to indicate in the introduction of the CIP, we've established a very, very close working relationship between PCTA and Palama. The training is being run by Palama, but the accreditation and the monitoring of that accreditation is done by PCTA. So that is in place. And Madam Chair, as well, as part of this work, PCTA and Palama are working jointly together with the QCTO to issue the CIP as a qualification at the end of the day. We should get that in place by early next year. The second part we're looking at is in relation to promotion, where we want to introduce compulsory training program, and we want to introduce a qualification as an entry requirement into senior management service. So a qualification, for example, a certificate in public service administration before you become a senior manager. So we want to introduce that as well, as part of the work with Palama and PCTA. Then the final area we're looking at is in-service training. We don't want to forget our people that are in the service, so we want to train. In that regard, Madam Chair, we're working jointly with PCTA and Palama, and we've already received funding from the National Skills Fund to get 3 qualifications approved through the QCTO. And we understand that those qualifications will be in place by next year. 3 qualifications that deals with public administration, covering all of those areas. I want to indicate the second part that the Minister spoke about is opening the public service as a training space. We've already started that work. Jointly between DHET, Palama, PCTA and ourselves, we're doing work. PCTA has organized a colloquium for the last week of November, which key focus is on opening the public service as a training space. And the major challenge there is around the mentors and coaches, but we're looking at how we overcome that. As I indicated, HR Connect is now implemented across the public service. The reports are ready. We are in the process of disseminating all of those reports to departments, which will give them a very clear skills program. And I think we'll need to work very closely with DHET, rather than coming up with a new system, is to extend the HR Connect system to cover the private sector as well. Because it has the same basis, and I think it's based to the on the occupations as well. So, Madam Chair and members, thank you very much for this opportunity. But in closing, I think DPS has played a central role and is playing a central role in coordinating the partners to ensure that we capacitate the public service to get us where we want to get. We have a long way to go. I think we want to acknowledge that. We have a long way to go. But we're playing that coordinating role to ensure it happens. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thanks, Mr. Govinda. Members. Honorable Mohan.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The acting DG from Public Service and Administration. On the issue of disability profile of interns and learners, there is nothing to smile about. There is really nothing to smile about. Even those who have employed them at some point, there is nothing to smile about. It doesn't mean people should be fixed on the 2%. There are more people out there who need jobs, who want to be economically active like the rest of the people. And the other thing that I would like to ask to understand is on your human resource development strategic framework. I would like to understand you correctly. You just do the overall. You've got that one for 2016. You just do the overall, and each department makes its own human resource development strategy. So, meaning you don't have to check whether they followed the procedure that you put in place or not. And my other question then will be on the with regard to workplace skills plan. To say, as a department, do you check whether the people have followed their work skills plan? Like, if they plan to train so and so on these courses and so on these courses. Because these people are spending money. There's money that is being spent. Aren't they deviating to maybe just do simple courses rather than leaving the others? For example, we've got a problem with financial management in the public service. And that we would like to see more people being trained with supply chain and related courses in financial management. Do we see people saying that they are lacking skills with financial management and not being trained either in that direction? Because when I was looking at the report from the Public Service Commission, there are a lot of money that are spent there, some up to 9 million for training. What is that money doing if we don't see any change? Because it means that money was allocated. And the 9 million, is it the 1% real? So it means you've got a lot of money lying somewhere, Chairperson, which has to be used for training. And the cry always is that there's lack of capacity and skills, whereas there are millions lying somewhere. It's either they are misused or somewhere they are not used. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. The one thing that I want to fully agree with my colleague is the training of people with disabilities. I mean, to have in certain departments and provinces a zero is just must be unacceptable. So I mean, if that is typical of what happens in the rest, then my goodness, what kind of example do we set if we don't want to take that in? I want to challenge the department to go and look at the annual reports of the departments, and if you look at staff and staff turnover and absentees of staff, then you will see that the most loyal staff members are those with disabilities. They are the least absent, and the turnover of staff are the lowest amongst people with disabilities. So isn't that a sign of a fantastic investment to be made? And I think a lot more should be done in that regard, and maybe that is something that the department should report to us in the future, because it seems like a lot of directives are issued, but a directive is not necessarily compulsory. And somewhere along the line, I know we've talked about in previous committee meetings about a public service police force, for lack of a better word. In other words, a central department that can investigate and make sure and enforce. Because I think one of the other challenges that you have mentioned here that I've picked up is, and I want to commend the department, and I've always said that I think the department is doing good work. But the problem is the other departments, where it needs to be implemented, that there is no proper response from. And currently you've got no power to enforce that other to give directives and to basically make suggestions. And if we can't go beyond that point, then you will always have those who will not take it serious or will just tick the boxes but will not properly implement that. So somewhere along the line, we will have to come up, and I've picked up that you've used the words enforcement and compulsory. So obviously, how will the minister give a directive and make it compulsory if there's not something in the act that empowers her to basically enforce other departments to comply with that or to enforce them to do this? How will that be dealt with? Because I mean, we cannot use the words and then not implement, you know, what the actual meaning of that is. Then secondly, on your page or slide 10, you give us an indication of the internists and learners in the national provincial departments. Have you done a correlation investigation to look at the correlation between those departments and provinces with learners and interns and the outcomes. I'm asking this question, and maybe I'm playing a bit of a devil's advocate. If you look at Limpopo, who is currently under administration because of poor governance, they are doing exceptionally well with learners and interns. But my question is, what do they learn them? What do they teach them? And how do we make sure that those learners and interns are not wasting their time and being taught the wrong things? So that will be important. The issue about the disability I've dealt with. One of the things that the Public Service Commission has just told us, that it seems like there are staff who prefers tertiary institutions programs above that of Palama and PCTA. So in other words, it sounds fantastic, the cooperation with Palama and PCTA, but if it comes from inside that people say that they would prefer rather to work with a tertiary institution, it means that something is wrong. And I think we've identified that in the committee, that there are conflicts. So in other words, it doesn't sound as nice as maybe as you make it out to be. And I'm quite concerned that, you know, what is the real thing there? And also, you have mentioned nowhere where there's collaboration with tertiary institutions. And that's not only universities. There might be the colleges and other universities of technology and things like that. What are the collaboration with them, especially to develop a curriculum or a syllabus? Because of what you have said about the training and the compulsory training, I think that is fantastic. That's exactly the ideas that we need. That they have to qualify to be eligible to be considered for a specific position. I think that's the right direction. But I'd like you to just respond to the others. Thank you very much.
Honourable Marilaga, do you still have a question? Thank you, Chair. Though I'm covered, the Honourable Mohale asked the question that I wanted to ask, but I was going to say, in terms of training, when they check compliance, they will only check how many people were trained. What about the quality? Thank you, Chair. Okay. Can I request a response to be summed up? We have a very important meeting that was scheduled at 12:30. If there are other issues, possibly we can follow up in terms of the writing.
Thank you. Very, very briefly. I think from our side, we welcome all of the statements, and I think there is an area that we need to do lots of work, and we acknowledge that, and that will be done. Yes, the one area that we need to focus on is on the quality. At the moment, we're simply focusing on compliance. We now need to improve the quality of what's happening in the training that's happening down there. In relation to disability, we acknowledge that, yes. We're saying for now at least we can get people into internships and learnership programs and hopefully employ them into the public service. And we are introducing the job access strategy and a whole range of other things to enable departments, even the PRAD policy that we put in terms of assisting people with disabilities and the purchasing of equipment to support them. Palama and DPSA is an area where it's work in progress. I want to acknowledge that. There's still challenges around the funding model that is used by Palama in terms of this training and the cost linked to it, and it's work we're currently doing with them. Collaboration with FETs and the higher education institution is we've already established that. In fact, Steve Mormon from Department of Higher Education and Training is part of our task team that's looking at compulsory induction program. As part of that program, we're going to train something like 30,000 public servants a year. And we acknowledge Palama and the provincial academies can't do it alone. So we're going to use further education training colleges to assist us in the rollout. So we're looking at those partnerships. We're going to take them forward. Madam Chair, with your permission, the issue around directives. Directives are impossible. The Public Service Act, in terms of, I think it's 16, if I remember. Public Service Section 16, I stand to be corrected, but enables the minister to ensure that any directive she issues is enforced. She can call on a executing authority to make sure that that directive is implemented. If not, why not? They need to supply this. The head of department in the public service in DPSA can request any of his colleagues to take action against an official who has not implemented a directive in that manner. So there are mechanisms for enforcement, and it's something we need to now take forward. And it's an area we're looking at. You'll notice in all our new directives we issue, we're even building in that clause into the directive going forward. Thank you very much.
I will just take this moment to appreciate that we've got a discussion that still needs to unfold, that has different angles, and of course maybe the issue that Honorable Mara raised of Palama Pisita, we all know that while it's not as well and good, we still need to improve the relations. We heard from the Minister that there's quite a lot that is done in Palama, but the integration and the synergy, including what was raised earlier on in terms of the location of Pisita, there's still some work that has to be done. We think we had a fruitful working day, and we need a seminar around these matters, but we'll structure it properly so that it doesn't become a top shop, but it becomes issues that are able to isolate and assist us to take matters forward. At this point, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, commissioner, here, I would like to thank all of you, and the meeting is adjourned.
Mm-hmm.